At such a time, Mars is said to be in opposition to the Sun. The last opposition of Mars was a year ago, when Mars was closer to the Earth and brighter in our sky than it had been for nearly two decades. This year was rather poor for watching Mars. We were ahead of it in orbit when the year began, and when the year ends, when we've come a full circle around the Sun, Mars will have moved half of its orbit ahead, and so will be ahead of us. That's hard to visualize without looking at a picture of the orbits of the two worlds. But try to imagine where Mars is now, traveling on one side of the Sun, while we're moving along on the other side, so that we can't see Mars now from Earth. Mars will be directly behind the Sun from us on September 29th. Around now, Mars lies at its greatest distance from us this year. If you were talking to an astronaut on Mars today, it would take about 45 minutes for a simple question and answer to make the round trip using radio waves traveling at the speed of light. This is Stardate. Our writer-producer is Deborah Bird. We'd like to send you a copy of Stardate magazine. To get one, you'll have to send us your name and address and $1 to cover postage and handling. Send it to the University of Texas McDonald Observatory, Austin, Texas, zip 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Please hold on for the next available operator. We can have your call handled quickly if you have the name, town, and whether your call is for a business or residence. Thank you.
Somebody I never met, but in a way I know. Didn't think that you could get so much from a picture show. Man, diversity of people are what the deal. This ain't how it's supposed to be. Don't I know every rich and me. Took the truth in power, set a pop star, died in there. No fancy screaming, shouting, must have came to flush him out. New identity must be found. Only left me for a while. Sanity for he was out.
Walk in the sun. Hi, and good evening to you. I'm sorry, I'm just rather overcome at being here. I don't know what's come over me, I'm just overcome. Yes, this is Brain Damage. That was Big Audio Dynamite, which BAD has a lot of the same letters as Brain Damage, but that's about the only similarity there. That's very rare mix that you just heard, something you probably never heard before. I mean, you might have heard the song, but it's one of four different mixes, and it's called E equals MC squared. That's the widescreen remix in 70 millimeters, and it's part of a double 12-inch single, which is not that common a thing to see, you know, a 12-inch single that falls out like a double album, except it's actually just two 12-inch singles. And that was a personal gift from Don Letts of Big Audio Dynamite. And he also, in case you're kicking yourself for not having your tape recorders out for that one, because you'll probably never hear it again, he also gave me a rare recording that never made it onto vinyl of The Battle of All Saints Road, which we'll be getting to. We'll play that a little later on tonight. Oh, let's say about 10:40 or so. So you can, that's plenty of time to go out to the store and get a tape if you don't have one, and then come back and record it. It's plenty of time to go to one of those late-night shops and buy a tape recorder for your radio if you don't have one of those, too. It's worth it, and it's something you almost surely will never hear again. Well, good evening. Good evening, and hi. I'm Eric Corley. This is Brain Damage. I'm back after 6 weeks of rampaging around Europe, and happy to be here. Happy to see the place again. Happy to see, at least some of the people. I mean, I can't say I'm happy to see everybody, but most of you, I'm glad to see and hear from, and all that kind of thing. What have you been up to? What have you been doing? How was your summer? I mean, I missed the whole damn thing, didn't I? I was over wandering around in strange places where people drive on different sides of the road and sometimes not on the road at all, as some of my adventures will no doubt tell. Boy, did I have some interesting times. Some weird and wild and crazy and fun days and nights. Wandering through, and I recommend this for anybody of any age. First of all, if you're going to go someplace, you have to spend as much time as possible by yourself so that you can look upon things one-to-one. You can explore things, you can wander places. When you're with even one other person, there are always hassles. You know, if you're considerate, you're worried about whether or not the person is enjoying themselves as much as you are, or whether they're enjoying themselves more than you are, which is also a cause for concern. And if you're inconsiderate, you don't care, and you drag this poor person through hell. Either way, it's not that good, you know? And that's why I think it's best at least to, you know, if you travel with somebody, at least wander about separately. Because that way you'll have stories to tell and different ways of looking upon things. And you'll be able to do those little things that only you like to do and all your friends think are, you know, stupid things to do. Well, that's what I spent 6 weeks doing, is all these stupid things that I like to do and nobody else is really interested in. So I'll just bore you for the next few minutes telling you about some of those things. Started off in London, in England, for those of you on the other side of the Narragansett Highway. No, only kidding. And I won't tell you which side I meant either. Started off in London and wandered over to Amsterdam, which is a very difficult city to leave for many reasons. And then through Belgium, Germany, all the way over to Berlin. East Berlin, yes, a communist country. That was certainly a trip and a half. Back over to Luxembourg, then through to Paris for a couple of days, and back over to England for at least a week and a half, because it was just such a relief to get back to an English-speaking country after all these strange languages, which was disturbing, because one thing I noticed, particularly in Amsterdam, was that everybody is able to switch on and off in so many different languages. The average, and I'm not kidding, the average seemed to be about 5 languages. My friends over in Amsterdam could just talk to a German person like that, talk to an English person, talk to a French person. It's amazing. I mean, I don't know how, well, I know how they do it. And it's not some, they're not more intelligent than we are. We're every bit as smart and as bright. I mean, we're human beings too. And, you know, Mother Nature doesn't say, well, I'm going to fall short of the brains in, you know, in Texas and give them more brains over in Sweden or something. That's not how it works. It's how you're brought up. It's what you read, what you value. We're every bit as capable of learning other languages as any other country, any other person in any other country. It's just a question of whether or not we choose to value that enough to do it. And after wandering around for 6 weeks in foreign countries, I think I value that a little bit more. It would be so nice to know another language, because there are countries all over the world where people speak other languages and are having fun and saying things that we can't understand what the hell they're talking about or what they're doing. And we're missing out. We're missing out on so much by not being a part of this. And, of course, obviously it's easy for us to do this because we live in a huge country where we don't have to worry about speaking other languages. But, in fact, we feel threatened when a few people speak Spanish in New York City. We have lawmakers running around saying, oh, we got to make English the official language or else these Spanish-speaking people are going to drive us out of town. You know, insanity like that, you know? So that's what we got to be careful of. You know, we're painting ourselves into a corner. We're becoming isolationists, you know, and that's no good for anybody. It's no good for the people we're isolating ourselves from because we have a lot to offer. That's no good for us because we're missing out on so much. Ah, boy, I didn't mean to give a lecture like that, but let's see. I don't know where to start, you know? There was just so much to see, so much to talk about. I mean, oh, where can I start? Okay, toilets, all right? I don't mean to spend too much time on this, although I could spend the whole show on toilets, because it's just such a... I mean, it's kind of like a microcosm of the rest of your society, but I swear, I've never seen such variation in toilets in any trip I've ever taken before, okay? Now, England is fairly similar, although they do make some kind of scary noises sometimes. But once I got to Amsterdam and started wandering around the continent, that's when things really started to hit me as being completely different and strange and obscure. Now, all throughout the Netherlands, I don't think I came across a single toilet that flushes the same way. In some cases, you grab hold of a pipe and you pull it down. It's the pipe that supplies water. And the water tank is up on the ceiling. You know, the water tank that's next to the toilet here is up on the ceiling, and that's where the water comes from, and it's really totally bizarre. So one time I pulled on a pipe. Another time I had to search for a knob, which was hidden behind the whole mechanism. Another time it was a button. Another time it was a foot pedal. And then it was a little knob that you turned. Another time you went outside and asked somebody else how to do it. And, you know, other times you applied for a permit. Well, that was in Germany. There's so many different incredible ways. And that's just the flushing part, okay? When I came home, I realized how strange so many things look here because I had been away for so long. So I came home, and the first time I looked at a toilet, which wasn't too long after I got home, I noticed, boy, we put a lot of water in those damn things. Because in Europe, they put very, very little water. Like, just a little bit, you know? Which changes the whole concept of using one of the things, because especially in Germany, they actually seem, and I don't know if this is true, but it might be worth looking into a little bit more, they actually seem to be rather proud of whatever it is that they, leave there, because there's not only not as much water, but in fact a little pedestal. That's a pedestal, like a little thing that rises up above the water that all of the things that you put in there, you know, stand up above the water line. And it just changes everything because, well, first of all, you know, you want to get out of there a whole lot sooner, that's for sure. But it just it changes the way you you look upon things. And then when you get back to the States, it seems so strange. It seems strange, and you realize how it must be for somebody coming here for the first time. And that's not only true of toilets, and I think I'm pretty much finished with that, so you can resume whatever you were doing. It's true of telephones. It's true of the way buildings look. It's true of the way cars look, the way people dress, all kinds of things like that. That's one of the things, one of the many, many different things. Where did I go? Okay, Berlin is a bizarre city. I mean, it's probably the most strange city in the world. Now, a lot of you might not know. I think a lot of people know this, but, perhaps some of the younger people don't. That, Berlin obviously is a divided city. Half of it, West Berlin, belongs to the West, and half of it, East Berlin, belongs to the East. East Berlin is communist, West Berlin is capitalist. But what you may not know is that the city itself, both West Berlin and East Berlin, is well in the middle. In fact, even on the other side of East Germany, which is a communist country. So you have West Germany, and then you have the border, and you have East Germany, and then well in, a couple of hundred miles into East Germany is this suddenly this capitalist city pops up, West Berlin. And the wall that separates East Berlin from West Berlin is actually a circle that encircles West Berlin. And that's the way that works. And what even fewer people know is that inside East Berlin is a little tiny piece of West Berlin. And it's a subway station. It's the most incredible thing. There is two subway systems. It used to be one subway system in Berlin because it used to be one city. So what they had to do when they divided the whole city off, they had to divide the subway system too, which is kind of hard when you think of it. I mean, how do you imagine if New York City suddenly got sliced in half? You know, you'd have trouble, especially with the N and the R trains going diagonally up the city. So what they had to do was make certain lines purely west lines, make other lines purely east lines, and some lines cut through East Berlin, but remain west lines. It's really strange, and they pass by abandoned East Berlin stations. And there is one case where they make a stop in, actually two cases where they make a stop in East Berlin. One is simply a transfer point, I believe, and the other one is a place where you can actually go over the border. And it's in East Berlin, but you are officially still in West Berlin. It's incredible. You have to see it to believe it. And you have to experience the whole thing. Now, going to East Berlin was an adventure. And I have to admit, it was kind of scary because, you know, you don't really know what's going to happen when you go to a place that's been told to you so many times in the media as a hostile environment, you know, a place where freedom is a dirty word and that kind of thing. So all that was going through my head as I was, you know, walking past Checkpoint Charlie, which is the main place where you go across the border. It's one of two places that Americans can go across the border. Germans can go across a few more. So walking along Checkpoint Charlie, wondering if I was ever going to make it back to the West again, I stood on this this long, long, long line of people that, for some reason or another, wanted to go to East Berlin. And generally, people go for an afternoon. They go for an afternoon, wander around, and then come back. But I wanted to do more than that. I wanted to spend a night there. I wanted to wake up in a communist country. You know, I guess I'm kind of perverse in that way. But I just wanted to see, you know, the whole picture, not just a little bit of it. And also, I wanted to experiment with a few things. When you go over, you have to exchange money. You have to exchange West German marks for East German marks. I believe the rate you have to exchange 25 per day or something like that. So you take your 25 West German marks, you give them to the guard, and he gives you 25 East German marks. And the secret there is that you are getting ripped off, because East German marks are not worth anything near West German marks. So that's kind of how they get you. And it's illegal to bring West German marks into East Germany. But I mean, it's not really illegal, it's just not, you know, it's kind of frowned upon. But since that's what I'm pretty much here for, is to be frowned upon, I went to a West German bank before I went over to the other side, and gave them 10 West German marks and asked for East German marks in return. And you know what they gave me? They gave me 85 East German marks in exchange for 10. 85 East German marks. It was the most incredible thing. And then I got really paranoid about carrying it over the border. You know, what happens if you get caught smuggling money into a country, you know, smuggling their own money into a country? I mean, the implications of that are simply staggering. So I stashed it in a place that nobody would ever look, and fortunately they didn't. But what they did look at was the shirt I was wearing as I was walking through. And believe me, I picked the least offensive shirt that you could possibly imagine, because I have some pretty offensive T-shirts. But I picked the least offensive one. But they didn't like that, because it was a Grateful Dead T-shirt, you see, and it had a little skull and crossbones on it. And I don't know what that means to East Germans, but it meant enough for them to tell me to stay where I was and have the supervisor come in and look at me and tell me to turn around a couple of times, you know, like I was in some kind of fashion show or something. And they eventually figured it wouldn't be harmful for that kind of thing to be seen in their country, and they let me in. At which time I proceeded to wander around. I stayed in a youth hostel over there, which was rather pleasant, I think. And just wandered around the city, took pictures of everything. Nobody stopped me. Nobody got in my way. I was able to explore. I'm sure that I was not being watched all the time because of the places that I went to. I went out into the countryside virtually and just explored everything and stayed until the next day. But the one thing you should not do if you go to East Berlin, do not try to get a Coke. Now, this became a very big thing with me because it was a heat wave while I was there. It was about 90 degrees, very hot for that time of year there especially. And I kept trying to get a Coke. You know, a Coke with ice was really what I wanted more than anything. And it just you don't realize how much that means to you until it's something that you can't get. What they give you when you ask for a Coke is this crap. I mean, that's really what it is. There's no question about it. It's warm, and it's bubbly, I'll give you that, but it's, you know, it doesn't really taste like anything. I think they call it Club Cola or something is what the real name of it is. But it's not Coke, that's for sure. And every time I asked for water with ice, I got this bubbly water with no ice, which was disappointing, to say the least. And then, of course, I had all this money to spend, you know, and that's something that happens to a lot of people when they go to East Berlin. They have all this money you know, because they've done what I did. They change money in West Berlin, not realizing that it's almost impossible to spend money in East Berlin. First of all, everything is so damn cheap, you know. When I was riding on the subways, I figured it cost about the equivalent of a penny for every trip I took, and you could stay on for as long as you like. So I kept drinking beers and going to to these restaurants on top of TV towers and cafes and things like that. Just could not spend the money. Finally, the only way I could get rid of the money was to actually send telegrams to some of my friends, and that wiped it out pretty quickly. So then I was able to go back home, because you can't take the money back with you. You see, you can't take it back, and even if you could, nobody would give you anything for it. You know, that's just the way it is. And I guess that, you know, if you're an economist or something, you could sort of figure out what the economic problems of an Eastern Bloc country are. But I don't really care about that. I'm just in it for the adventure. It was an adventure. West Berlin also was quite a trip. Both cities are extremely attractive and very big. Everything is huge. But West Berlin obviously has a lot more life in it, a lot more spontaneous people. Everybody walks around with, you know, blue hair and spiked hair and strange faces and that kind of stuff. And I had a very hard time leaving Berlin, too. Berlin and Amsterdam were the two cities that I really had trouble leaving. It was emotional leaving those places because, you know, you wonder, are you ever going to be back? Are you ever going to see it again? Pretty much just spent time wandering around. I don't think I've ever done so much walking in my life. And just taking it all in, you know. Meeting people. Almost everybody could speak some English, and it was possible to hang out with them and, you know, go to cafes and radio stations. There's a radio station in Berlin called Radio 100, and they as of September 1st, they've gotten permission to be a 24-hour station. And, you know, they're kind of like us here at USB. They're run mostly by you know, young-type people that are into different alternative things. And they're trying to make alternative programming on the FM. But what's unique about their station, of course, is where they are. They're in Berlin, for God's sake. They're in Berlin, where half their audience, at least, is in the communist country that really isn't supposed to hear those kind of things. But that's, you know, that's not true, because there is a station in East Berlin that plays punk music. That's right. I mean, there's all kinds of misconceptions that we have. And one of the things I was successful in doing when I went to East Berlin, although it took me a good 4 hours, I was able to track down our Radio Berlin International, which is the voice of East Germany, and convince them to send us some tapes, pretty much the way that Radio Moscow sends us tapes now. And who knows, maybe at the beginning of next week's program, we'll hear something from them. We'll go back to Moscow Mailbag next week. I know a lot of people have been upset that they haven't heard that in a while, but that's just too damn bad, I guess. There's more I want to tell you about, but also I want to hear from you folks. This is a call-in show, right? So you can start getting the phones lit up, I guess, 632-6901. Berlin, yes, you know, every so often you're walking around the city of Berlin and you hear all this smashing and crashing noises coming from all over the place. It's people arriving at friends' houses smashing plates because it's the eve of a wedding. And you wouldn't believe how much that happens. It's simply amazing. I went to one of them and had quite a bit of fun smashing plates, although I smashed the wrong ones. But, you know, they're very forgiving. You just say you're American and you can get away with almost anything. But there's one thing that really gets me, and that's cigarettes. Everybody in the damn continent smokes, okay? This has absolutely nothing you can do about it. Everybody from little kids to dying adults, they all smoke. And no matter where I went, no matter where I was, you'd always hear the sound of that cigarette lighter going. You know, every 5 minutes you'd hear a cigarette lighter lighting up. You're in a cafe, you're in a subway, you're on a bus, you're in the street, you're in your own room trying to sleep. You know, people smoke everywhere all the time, 24 hours a day. I remember when I was leaving Germany, Now, I was on this train, and it was an overnight train. And when I take an overnight train, I stay up all night, and I do things, you know, like read and write and play jacks and, you know, whatever else, because I can't sleep on trains. But I was in this little compartment, and that's the difference between trains in Europe and trains in the United States. They have little compartments and a hallway next to the compartment. And in the train station, everybody sort of hangs their head out of the hallway compartment and just sort of looks out at the station. Because when you take a train trip in Europe, it means more than when you take a train trip here, because you're actually going someplace different. Like, you know, you're going from Germany to France, and it means something. You know, it's kind of like an emotional sort of thing. You know, going from New York to Chicago just doesn't really, you know, inspire all that much emotion. So, you know, you have that kind of atmosphere. You have this little compartment where there's room for six people that face each other, and it's sort of like a little room. And I was stuck in this room. You can tell I'm not too happy about the situation. I was stuck in this room with these two old ladies who were chain smokers, you know? And what really got me ticked was the fact that I went into this place, right? And I saw a little, you know, cigarette sign with a little red thing through it, which meant no smoking. At last, I had found the only no smoking car in the whole damn train system. I was really happy. But then, when I realized, as these two chain smokers started lighting up immediately upon entering, that some moron had simply put a little red thing with crayon down it, and this was actually indeed in the heart of the smoking center, and kind of late for me to get up and move to another section, which was probably filled anyway. So I had to deal with these chain-smoking old ladies who stayed up all night long, saying things in German back and forth and back and forth, back and forth, lighting up, smoking, breathing. And it's just, after a while, you know, I just look at these ladies, and they're lighting up another cigarette, and I just look at them, and I want to say, Jesus Christ, what the hell is wrong with you people? I mean, don't you realize we're in a closed compartment? The windows are closed. The door is closed. All you have to do now is simply keep breathing. There's nothing but smoke in here. There's no more molecules. You've sucked up the last of the oxygen. What in the world are you trying to do? But I didn't say that. I just simply smiled and tried to concentrate on what I was doing. You know, trying to be a nice, pleasant tourist. And I will know in a few years if I'm going to die as a result of all the smoke I inhaled on this damn trip. I didn't smoke a single cigarette, although I did have a rather nasty experience with drugs. Oh, yes, drugs. And how was I to know that we had declared war on the damn things when I was away, you know? I mean, came back with all these presents for everybody, and I declared them, too. And then I find out we're at war, you know? It's like trying to smuggle in Iranians or something, you know? Suddenly realize that it's supposed to be the enemy. Well, what better place to have a drug experience than Amsterdam? In fact, I think it's required that you have a drug experience in Amsterdam. Things are not legal there, but they're not illegal either. You know, you can walk around and smoke things, and nobody really cares all that much. It's your life. You do what you want to do with it. As long as you don't hurt anybody else, that's pretty much the way it is. I found myself at a party after this hacker convention that I went to. That's, by the way, the reason I went over there was to hang out with all these computer hackers and see the Chaos Computer Club firsthand and all that kind of thing. And after this convention, we had this party at this rich guy's house in the suburbs. And a bunch of us went out there, and this rich guy was really a strange person, a very, very strange person. And he was into all this, you know, wild, crazy stuff, you know. And one of the things that he wanted to do was have a little experiment, yes. He wanted to pass out some drugs to people. And he asked for volunteers. He wanted some people to take ecstasy, and he wanted some people to take LSD, and he wanted them to interface over the telephone lines with a computer in California. And he wanted the people that were tripping on all kinds of neat drugs to try to influence the computer. And there would be people over there in California tripping their brains out that would be trying to influence the people back here in Amsterdam. And oh, it would be such an incredible, wild experience, and we would be seeing so many amazing things if we did this. And here we are, a bunch of the craziest people, craziest mix of people you'd ever want to see. Skinheads, people with spiked blue hair, people with eyelids that defy description, all kinds of, you know, the cream of the crop from Germany and from Holland and from England, standing there. And would you believe not one person, not one of those people took the guy up on his offer to take all these nice, neat drugs and have this experiment? Not one person went for it. And you should have seen the look on the guy's face. He was crestfallen. He couldn't believe it. Here he was with all these supposedly druggy-looking people, but nobody wanted to take drugs. It's like, what's wrong with you people? Well, a short time later, this guy was feeding us, too, you see, and he would occasionally bring out things. And a short time later, he brought out the cookies. Yes, and everybody there likes cookies, of course. You know, everybody all over the world likes cookies. But what we didn't realize was the cookies had a special ingredient in them. Actually, to be fair, I should say the cookies had many special ingredients in them. And a couple hours later, as I was sort of wandering, pacing around the apartment or the house, whatever it was out in the suburbs, I realized that I wasn't acting the way I usually acted. I was having all these paranoid thoughts. I was moving very fast. I couldn't seem to sit down. I couldn't seem to stop. My pulse was going really, really, really fast. And I said, oh boy, what's going on? What the hell is going on here? Something's wrong with me. I don't know what it is. I'm in a foreign country here. I don't speak the language. I'm with crazy people, you know. What do I do? What do I do? What's going on? Completely panicking. And when you have certain kinds of drugs, it's very easy to make yourself panic. Especially if you don't know what you're on. Especially if you don't know that you're on a certain kind of drug. You can just keep saying to yourself, I'm going to die now, you know. Horrible things are going to happen to me. And your pulse increases. And you just keep worrying more and more and more. But by the same token, you can also say to yourself, everything's going to be all right. And just saying that to yourself, just saying, everything's going to be all right, makes you actually calm down. It sounds incredibly simple and childish, but it does work. Fortunately, I knew this. And fortunately, I was able to calm myself down and start to slowly figure out what had happened. Mainly, that this crazy person who lived in this house that was now nowhere to be seen because he was off, you know, tripping his brains out somewhere, he had actually gone around asking for contributions for the cookie ingredients. In other words, whatever people had in their pockets, they would literally throw onto a pan, and he mixed it all together into this cookie dough, and gave people things that they probably will never know what it was, really. And it was an incredibly stupid, dangerous thing to do. I heard people acting weird all throughout the night. People screaming, people running around, acting hysterical, disappearing and never being seen again. And I finally was able to convince myself to fall asleep. I fell asleep on a fireplace. Can you believe this? On the mantelpiece of a fireplace. I fell in the hardest, most uncomfortable position you could possibly imagine, and I slept there for 12 hours. 12 hours I slept there on a fireplace. And then I woke up. And I found a couple of other survivors who also had realized what had happened. And from that point on, we set out to gain revenge. And we all called our friends in whatever countries we were from on this guy's phone. Yes, we called our friends and talked to them for as long as we felt like doing it. And it all went on his phone bill, which made us feel a little bit better, but still, it was a real scary thing to go through that kind of experience. But how do I bring that back to the United States? Well, the United States, I learned that we had declared war on drugs when I was, I think, in London. Yeah, in London. And I've got a actually a newspaper piece about it, an editorial from the Evening Standard. And maybe this will tell you how the rest of the world looks upon. This is the wrong one. No, wait a minute, that's not right. Hold on a minute. Here we go. Solving the drugs crisis. The Evening Standard, Wednesday, September 6th. On national television. And I missed this, folks. I missed President Bush holding the bag of crack. I really wanted to see that. But I guess, you know, you lose these things when you go away. On national television in a fanfare of publicity, President Bush last night unveiled his $8 billion crusade against the drugs menace, aiming to cut illicit drug consumption by 50% over the next 10 years. He spoke of sending military and economic aid to help Latin American governments against their own drug cartels, the death penalty for convicted drug traffickers, and more money for law enforcement. Relatively less emphasis was placed on dealing with the drug consumers, now estimated to number as many as 25 million Americans, except for a very welcome strategy of sanctions to make drug users in schools and workplaces accountable for their habit by such methods as canceling their student loans or revoking their driving licenses. In sum, this was a nut to crack a sledgehammer. President Bush must know perfectly well, as do all governments, that while drug demand fuels supply to the tune of countless billions of dollars a year, a war against the drug barons can never succeed. Destroy one source of supply, and others will spring up. All that carrying the drug war into Latin America will achieve is putting up the price of cocaine, increasing the profits of drug dealers, and intensifying organized crime, which victimizes the innocent as well as the guilty. It is not drugs that kill in great numbers. It is the guns that are used to protect and spread their illicit trade, reducing the centers of many American cities almost to a state of civil war. President Bush's crusade of interdiction will not reverse or even slow this process any more than did the crusade undertaken by some of his predecessors against the abuse of alcohol. Prohibition didn't stop liquor. All it did was introduce gangsterism to the United States and allow the mafia in. Public hysteria about heroin and cocaine is blinding our legislators and forcing them into actions which can only worsen the problems of drug abuse. Alcohol kills more people than cocaine. Tobacco kills more people than cocaine and is just as addictive. Ain't it the truth? The reason that neither of these drugs nowadays creates an overwhelming social problem is that they have both been legalized and therefore to some extent controlled. If cocaine and heroin were to be decriminalized, under whatever careful system of licensing and taxation, they too could be controlled. The vast, ugly, and violent apparatus of drug cartels, smugglers, traffickers, pushers, and criminal users, the greatest source of organized crime in America, would disappear overnight. And the billions which President Bush is misspending on the drugs war could be diverted to educating people away from drug use. Decriminalization is a radical step, and a painful one for many of us to come to terms with, but it is the only means by which the worsening drugs crisis can ever be overcome. I'd like to know what people think about that, and if there's been any discussion about that since I've been away, because there certainly is over in Europe. It seems kind of crazy to be devoting so much energy to fighting something which is as certain to stay with us as any other fact of life. I don't know. Our number is 632-6901. I'm going to play that very rare song now. Well, actually, it's not a rare song. It's a rare mix of a song that was on Big Audio Dynamite's third album. It's called The Battle of All Saints Road. And tell you what the song means when I come back, because I actually lived through a battle on All Saints Road, which is in England. I didn't know that when I left here. I didn't know anything about the song, but now I've come back and I'm educated about it. And it's quite an experience. But I do want to hear from people. 632-6901. Our phone lines are open. The program is Brain Damage. We're on until 12. Big Audio Dynamite.
No matter what the people say, these sounds lead the way. It's beyond our control.
tall. A skinny white dude came in and took a chair.
He had a black leather jacket and reef like hair.
That's Brooklyn, baby, pommy.
There it is, every last second of the Battle of All Saints Road, special version never released on vinyl. Heard it here on WUSB in Stony Brook. Eric Corley with you for Brain Damage. And we will be presenting an exclusive Big Audio Dynamite interview, which I was able to do over there very soon on this station, as soon as I can piece it all together. And Big Audio Dynamite will be playing out in Sag Harbor next week, a week from today, in fact. Well, that's going to be a dilemma, won't it? I'll have to either do the radio show or see my favorite band. I don't know what to do. Well, anyway, where is everybody? Come on, I haven't seen a single phone call yet. I mean, what happened? My audience wasn't completely destroyed while I was gone. What was it? Maybe it was. Boy. I mean, I wanted to thank Tom Baker for filling in all those many weeks, but I can't very well thank him if he scared everybody away, can I? No. 632-6901. Let me tell you something about All Saints Road, okay, since I said I would. All Saints Road is in the heart of the black section of London, and every year in late August they have a carnival there, sort of a Caribbean type of festival. And this year, you may have heard about it, you may not have, I don't know. There was a bit of a riot there at the end of the carnival. Apparently the police clashed with some of the participants. And there was quite a bit of arrests and a few injuries and things like that, and led to a lot of commentary in the London papers. One Tory government official, and Tories are kind of the conservatives over there, kind of, understatement of the year. One of them said quite openly, you know, if these people want to have carnivals, they should go back to the Caribbean and do it there. And that kind of statement was what was prevailing. However, as in the case of Tompkins Square Park, it was soon found that maybe it wasn't quite the way it was being reported. Maybe the police had instigated this. And I went there a couple of days afterwards, and I could still see some of the signs up, you know, Portobello Road closed, don't go down this road. And it sort of matched what the people were saying, that they were all being crowded onto these, you know, little tiny streets where naturally tempers flared because they were, you know, packed in like cattle. And didn't necessarily seem to be something like, you know, an angry crowd that just was out to cause trouble, but something perhaps that was provoked by hostile police. While I was there, I walked down All Saints Road, and, you know, people were hanging out in the street. But then all of a sudden, and I'm not kidding, all of a sudden, these policemen came up in a car, unmarked car, and they got out, and they arrested this guy. They just arrested him for no reason. I mean, they said, you know, we're going to take you away because you're obstructing justice, or some crap like that. And suddenly everybody was yelling and screaming, saying, you know, you can't do this to us, blah, blah, blah. And you know, more police arrived. All of a sudden, there were something like 20 police there, and a really angry crowd of people. You know, not violent or anything, but just, you know, kind of upset that these guys just suddenly come out of their car and take somebody from the neighborhood away. It's like living under occupation. But they did it anyway, and you know, the crowd was able not to throw things at the cops, which I really, you know, got to give them credit for, because it's a horrible thing to see somebody just taken away like that for no reason. And you know, I was there. I saw what was going on. Nothing was going on. People were just hanging out in the street. Nobody instigated anything. So with that kind of attitude and that kind of mood in the community, I could certainly see why such a thing could happen. Such a riot could occur. This is something that showed up again in the Evening Standard on August 30th by this guy, this brave guy named Stan Gebler Davies, who at that time was the only person to write anything in the paper critical of what the police did. And I kind of think it's in a typical British style the way he did it. You know, it's kind of a half humorous but very well taken points. Again, our phone number is 632-6901. If there's anyone out there listening, I would like to hear from you. I don't know what the hell's going on here tonight. It would be a terrible pity if the police, whom we have been brought up to admire and trust, should be reconstituted as an army on the continental model, an army whose poker-faced soldiers may not be addressed or questioned by citizens on the street without fear of arrest. I'm afraid that that is what is happening, and my fears were reinforced by my presence at the Notting Hill Carnival. I never saw so much filth, with a capital F, in all my life, if I may be allowed to use the term which is used affectionately by the citizenry to describe informally the guardians of their law. I wish to emphasize that it is the citizens' law. I mean that the law is ours. This being a democracy, we, the citizens, have made the law, and it is up to us to keep it. We employ the police, who are our servants, to ensure that those of us who are remiss or lax in keeping to the law are brought up short and held accountable. Now, listen to this, folks. Listen to this. This is not a boring article here. This is something that's very pertinent here and there. 632-6901 is our telephone number. Feel free to give us a call. We do not, however, employ the police to interpret the law or act as moral guardians, nor should they be mustered by the thousands from time to time in order to intimidate those citizens whom they suspect might just possibly have it in mind to behave badly. That is what they were doing at Notting Hill. They were there in such fantastic, ludicrous strength that they managed to frighten themselves. I was with friends at a luncheon party in Lansdowne Road, which is on the very periphery of the parade. We ventured out often, either alone or in groups whose members soon lost one another, and made the sweaty circuit of the streets quite safely, buying plantain and jerk chicken and the odd can of beer. We were innocently engaged in enjoying ourselves. In the ancient, decent jargon of the police, we were going about our lawful business. Of course, the people were mostly black. They were, in truth, almost entirely black. The festival has a fearsome reputation for anti-white hostility, which, in my experience, is unjustified, and it is a fact that white people are afraid of black people when they are in a black neighborhood. About half the white people on the streets were wearing blue uniforms. It was an awful nonsense. There were rows of coppers everywhere to be seen. Coppers, you like that, eh? There were barricades and truncheons and bored coppers to be seen on every corner. Some streets were off limits, especially to, except to residents. Since when may a street be declared off limits to a freeborn citizen? This guy never heard of Tompkins Square, apparently. I don't recall reading that in constitutional law. A line of blue-clad constables looking bored and witless snaked interminably from one street to another. If you took a close look at them, you could see they were not real fuzz but part-timers, some of them being about half the size of regulation-issue coppers and others either excessively fat or excessively thin. The fellows with the shields and the horses were another matter, but there was no sign of them until dark, when they came like an army, armored and mounted. Then, the earlier dubious image of the friendly copper telling you were not allowed to walk the public highway in England because it had been designated a safety area evaporated and was replaced by some fierce collective creature armed to the teeth like a French or American hit squad. I don't blame the police themselves. It isn't their fault. They have been told to behave like an army, and they are being given the equipment of an army. Their commanders have taken to referring to the rest of us as civilians, as if they were not civil servants themselves. I suppose it is our own fault for allowing assistant chief superintendents to appear on television explaining how they have just deployed 5,000 men in the fight against loose behavior. If you give the police a paramilitary function, I suppose you can scarcely complain if they use it. However, there will come a time when we will be sorry we gave them that function, as they must already be sorry themselves. The police used to be required to arrest wrongdoers after they had done it, but now we ask them to charge in regardless. I was at Notting Hill, and I know how peaceable it was. I have a dark suspicion that it was the police who rioted. I don't want to see that happen here. I don't know whether they frightened the criminals, but by God, they frightened me. That article written in the Evening Standard of London on August 30th by Stan Gebler Davies. And a very nice piece that is indeed. And that's pretty much how I came away seeing Battle of All Saints Road. And I also saw the Spike Lee film, finally, Do the Right Thing. And boy, was that misrepresented by the people that that reviewed it and the people that have been talking about it, you know? I saw that film, and I don't know if anyone else out there has seen it. If you have, please give us a call, 632-6901. But it amazed me, you know. The whole thing was presented in a rather fair way, unlike all the commentary I've been hearing. I mean, I can't point to... the way it was portrayed to me was that it was a racist film, you know, because the white people were looked upon as the villains who killed a black person and rioted and, you know, were racist and all that kind of thing. But you see the film, you realize that everybody is behaving like that. The white people, the black people, you know, the Koreans, every possible ethnic group that is in that film is behaving like a jerk to some degree. And also, they have their lovable qualities too. So there's good and bad in every community. And it's the stupid little things, like turn down your radio, or, you know, put up this picture instead of that picture, or, you know, why do you use this word instead of that word? It's the stupid little things that lead to the big problems. And I think it was put forth very, very well. And I don't see how anybody could look at that film and feel like a particular ethnic group was slighted in the slightest sense. I saw it as a very articulate statement. I'd like to know if anyone else agrees with that or disagrees with that or has anything else to say. Our telephone number, 632-6901. Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah?
This is WUSV?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, this is Andrew Goldberg.
Hello, Andrew. How are you? This is Eric, and you're live on the radio.
Oh, I didn't recognize your voice the first second.
Well, okay, I've been away for a while, but there's no need to say you can't recognize me anymore. I mean, I haven't changed that much, have I?
No, I just haven't. I'm downstairs now.
Andrew's in shock, I know. Well, it's going to take a while for everybody to get used to this again, but...
I'm not listening to the radio now, so I didn't know when you were going to pick up.
Oh, you're boycotting the radio. Great. Okay, well, you know, hysterical actions like that, Andrew, will lead you nowhere.
Okay, so... No, but I heard, like, up to that song.
Uh-huh.
The English song, whatever.
Yeah.
But, so what are you talking about tonight?
What's on your mind, Andrew?
I don't know. Anything.
How's your summer been?
Pretty good. You know, I went to camp this year again.
Oh, yeah? Camp by the transmitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Didn't fall down again, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, I've been through two of Andrew's camp seasons. That's showing my age, isn't it?
Yeah. No, but last week I talked about something interesting with that other guy.
That other guy, yes, Tom. Tom did a fine job, did he not?
All right, yeah. The people, though, didn't call in with, like, right response.
Uh-huh.
With all those pranks and everything.
All those pranks? What pranks?
Oh, he didn't tell you.
I don't want to hear about it. Okay. Why don't you tell me what you want to say.
Okay. Did you see, I know it was around the world, MTV Video Awards?
No, I did not. But they do have something over in Europe called MTV Europe, but it's, I didn't watch all that much television there, so... I was kind of, you know, occasionally I would pick up a foreign newspaper in English and hear about something that was going on back here. Like, who is the moron, the idiot that said they were going to turn Lebanon into an ashtray? You know, people go, I go around telling people I'm an American, but I got to live with nuts like that making statements, you know? I mean, somebody said that. Somebody in our government said proudly, yes, we can turn Lebanon into an ashtray in half an hour. I mean, God, makes you ashamed.
Someone in the government?
Yeah, someone in our government said that. And then I come back here, and the government is trying to control artists now? They're trying to regulate art? It's like Jesse Helms is in charge of something artistic? You know, it's... I don't know. I don't know where this kind of...
That was definitely different, the yeah. MTV Video Awards.
What's this about the MTV Video Awards?
What? Oh, it was on a couple of weeks ago. It was amazing how... Oh, different. there was Live, there was Bon Jovi, Paula Abdul, Bobby Brown, all these big names, and all of them messed up. They cannot sing.
Well, if they can't sing, it's good that they prove that to us.
No,
better than having voiceovers.
They can't sing without all that mixing equipment and everything, and all that thing to change their voices. They can't sing at all. Madonna needed backup singing, and all she was doing was lipping.
So what did you learn? You learned that these people
have no talent at all.
Well, maybe they don't have any talent, or maybe they're just, you know, human beings that got lucky, you know? Maybe nobody really has that much talent.
And then there were some things that were, like, a little obscene.
Yeah, I heard about that. So I heard about that. That was pretty interesting, wasn't it?
What?
That somebody, who was it, gave a monologue or something that was not in the best interest of MTV or something?
Oh, I didn't hear that. Andrew Dice Clay?
Yeah, that was the guy.
Oh, he's the one with the nursery rhymes that...
Well, I don't know what he said or what he did, but...
I did, but I can't say it over the air.
Yeah, well, he did, though.
yeah, he did.
Apparently, he's not going to be asked back again, I understand.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I saw him. I was watching this with my mother.
I hope you covered her eyes.
Yes. No, and ears.
And ears.
No, but there was, Tone Loc was there, too. He brought this girl up that was her shirt and everything.
Oh, dear. What is going on over our nation's airwaves? I don't know.
Yeah,
listen, Andrew,
Madonna put, and the other two girls that were singing with her, put her microphone in her top.
Well, look. All right, let me just say this about something, and, you know, if you feel it's not appropriate for you to hear, you hang up the phone immediately. In Europe, okay, people do not care about this stuff that much. I mean, we're crazy the way we care. Listen to me. You go into any stationery store, right, and you see copies of Playboy and Penthouse, except they're not the same copies we get. You see them, you see many, many, many other magazines, and they all have full bare-breasted women on the front cover. You pick up the Daily Sun, which is a daily newspaper. It's like the New York Post. And on page 3 is a bare-breasted woman. Now, I don't think there should be a bare-breasted woman in a newspaper. I don't see how that is news. You know, breasts pretty much look the same. And unless they change radically, you know, they shouldn't be in the newspaper because it's not really a news item. But they don't have the same hang-ups as far as, you know, covering people's eyes and saying, oh, that's bad for you to see that, you know. They don't have the same attitudes about nudity, about sex in general. It's just, it's no big deal, you know. It's so what? You know, just don't hurt anybody and don't do anything stupid, but it's your life.
Eric?
Yeah?
What about parents?
Sorry?
What about parents?
What about parents?
No, what do they think about that?
It's not an issue. It's just, you know, that's the way it is. You see old ladies, you know, picking up magazines right next to these ones with, you know, bare breasts and everything, and they don't care, you know. Let me say this. There's a lot more mixing of the old and the young. You know, like you see a lot of old people, and I mean people in their 80s, riding bicycles, you know, in the middle of a city.
Yeah.
Fast, you know. I almost got run over by an 80-year-old lady who was smiling as she did it. It was really something. But you see, there's a lot more mixing. The young people talk to the old people more. The old people hang out in pubs. They have stories to tell, you know. And it's just like, I don't know where they are here. You know, where did we put them? I don't know. But there isn't as much mixing, and there's not as much back and forth.
Yeah, did you see Spain?
No, I didn't go to Spain. Didn't have time for that. But I do want to go to Spain.
This year I'm learning Spanish, so I know.
Yes, definitely learn Spanish and practice it, too.
Yeah.
You know, even if to call somebody at random overseas and just talk to them, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Andrew, I want to go to some more calls.
Okay, thanks.
But thanks for calling. 632-6901. Give us a call. Good evening.
Negro.
Oh, at least they're complimenting me now. Good evening.
Hi. Do you think that's a good thing?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Things are so in Europe that people just don't care.
Well, I don't know if it's really people don't care. They just don't see it as worth getting all riled up about. I mean, look, you're going to have sex. You're going to have nudity. What is the big deal? You know, if there's a nude picture on the front cover of a magazine, what is that really going to do to somebody? Is it going to ruin their life or something? It's, you know, the things you want to keep people from doing are hurting themselves. You want to keep them from, you know, taking drugs and you know, slashing their wrists and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
And that is, when you're talking about this situation here where these you kind of refer to the cops taking people away almost like a fascist government type situation. How did you find the atmosphere in East Berlin? Was it as bad as you had expected, or?
Well, I'll tell you, when I went to East Berlin, I was very scared, because just the fact that you're in a city that, you know, has a wall and a city that you can't get out of, it's an unhealthy environment. There's no denying that. You know, it's the people are prisoners. There is no question about that. The people cannot leave on their free will. And it was strange, because I had to register with the police. I had to go to this strange building where it was like the motor vehicles department, except one of the lines you have to wait on has a policeman on the other end of it, and you have to register your whereabouts with this person. It was very bureaucratic. I had to pay this guy 15 marks to get a piece of paper, which I later showed to somebody in West Berlin and asked him to translate it.
German, I hope.
Yes. And all the piece of paper said was, "This is a very important piece of paper. Do not lose it." And to this day, I have no idea what it was I bought for 15 marks, except that little, you know, it's a very bureaucratic system. As far as military presence, yes, there are lots of soldiers walking around the streets. You know, they're sort of like, you know, they're not carrying guns and things like that, but the presence is there. But I didn't feel like my every movement was being watched, you know, because I was able to go all kinds of strange places. But, you know, I had mixed feelings about it. I mean, the people there are people like anywhere else. They're not living constantly in fear. They laugh. They you know, have Western-style hair and wear weird clothes sometimes. Their lives could be improved. Our lives could be improved in other ways. But, you know, they're people, too, and I think we should look upon them in that way.
I see. On this issue about these small things, I didn't see the movie, but I seem to think that a lot of things in society are labeled very quickly as far as racism goes. Like they say, just because males do better on the SATs, that the SATs must be racist against females. And the questions that they ask, maybe some algebraic question is anti female or something, or you know, and many other aspects of society, and you know, maybe some company is hiring more whites than blacks, or more men than women, say a computer company. Well, maybe women aren't into computers, maybe they are, but you know, or say some college doesn't have as many women in the math department as they do in the English department or something, and they say, oh well, that's racism, and then they start in with this affirmative action, which I believe is also racism. It's racism against the whites. And
yeah, I tend to agree with that, and that gets me in trouble with a lot of people. But anything that you know, that tells you what you can do based on your race is, by definition, racism.
Exactly. I think we should just forget about it. You seem to think that it seems to me that the Europeans don't really aren't so set upon these things. I'm not sure about the blacks on that street there, but for the most part, the Europeans that I've met, they don't get hung up on small things like that. You know, that some statistic says that.
Right. Yeah. We tend to be looking for things like that. Like last Tuesday, when in the mayoral race in New York, I was, you know, watching the returns coming in. It was incredible. David Dinkins and Mayor Koch, they had it all broken down. Not only whites and blacks, but white Catholics, white Protestants, white Jews. You know, I mean, okay, it's interesting, but who really cares? You know, I mean,
exactly.
It's just going to make people all the more polarized as far as who they are and what they're supposed to be voting. You know, if you're a white Protestant, okay, these people did this, so that means I must have to do that. I mean, why don't we just say the people of New York nominated David Dinkins, period? You know, forget this white-black nonsense. You know, because
absolutely.
I'll tell you, in England, you know, there is racism in England, no question about that. But it's different because here I was watching the police taking away this guy, and what do you think happens? These people with perfect Cockney accents who happen to be black go around saying, "I'm not a wanker, you're a wanker," you know, to a cop, which means that the cop had originally called them a wanker. And, you know, it's just like, okay, there's racism, but there's also togetherness. You know, these people are speaking the same language, and you see a lot of white and black people hanging out together, which I'm sorry to say you don't see that often in New York.
Reminds me of another thing, and that is there's this guy who was the manager of this beauty salon. I don't remember exactly where it is. My mother told me about this. Anyway, so he stopped his car in front of the place so that he could unload some supplies, and this cop comes by and she gives him a ticket because he's parked in the no parking zone, and then he kind of gets annoyed and he calls her in a expletive or obscenity. Anyway, so she goes, "What did you say?" And he said, "Oh, I didn't say anything." And she put on handcuffs and took him to the police station. And ultimately, he got fingerprinted and all that junk, and he got fined for $500. I think it's really stupid for a society to, you know, here you have a guy who's trying to run a business, you know, and he's stopped his car in front of his own place so that he can do business, and you have some obviously dumb police officer who's trying to be a jerk about something, and when he gets annoyed, I mean, what happened to free speech? I think it's a very stupid law that says that you can't chew out a police officer.
Well,
if you...
Yeah, I mean, I was under the impression that words are only words, and that you can, you know, what is the harm? What makes a
special about?
I mean, look,
if I
said that to you,
if you call a police officer an expletive,
right,
does that hurt society as a whole?
I have been told by people, including police officers, that you're not supposed to do that, and you could get in a lot of trouble for it. And I don't understand. Are police officers, you know, of a higher level than the rest of us? I mean, if I called you a name, could you call the cops and have me arrested for calling you that? And I don't think it works that way. And I really think, you know, let's grow up here. You know, we're living in the 1980s, and if somebody calls you a name, you just, you know, it's a name. Okay, big deal, you know. Walk away from it. Don't make a big deal out of it, because how did this help? How did finding the guy $500 and taking him to jail and fingerprinting, I mean, it wasted my tax-paying dollars, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you know, and the guy has to stop. And she took him away, so he had to leave the keys to this other guy because he couldn't close the place down after he was done and open it in the morning and everything. And it was a big pain in the ass for him, and he's just trying to get by. I thought that was really bad.
Uh-huh.
All right, nice talking to you.
Okay, well, thanks. Where are you calling from?
Stony Brook, right down the road. I live off of Stony Brook Road. So.
Ah, well, okay. You know, Stony Brook Road used to be called, wait a minute, hold on, I know this. Does anybody here know this? It used to be called Long Hill Road or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Why don't you ever have guests?
Why don't I ever have guests?
Yeah, it seems very rare that you have guests.
Shall I?
There, here's a guest. See, we have guests all the time. You see, what happens is...
They don't talk.
I'm rather foolish here because I invite all these people up, these celebrities, and then I sort of talk the whole time and I forget to you know, and they sit there and at the end of the show they say, "Hey, Eric, you know, you never asked me to say anything. I came all the way up here from the Bronx or something."
Does he even have my mic on?
Yeah, the mic's on.
Oh, good.
But, you know, yes, it's a point well taken. There should be more guests here. I mean, who would you like me to get? I can get anybody.
Yeah,
oh,
I'm coming from far ways
maybe
away.
Maybe you could get some cops.
Sorry, the only problem is the guests can't hear you.
Yeah,
that's the only problem. We don't have a sophisticated system here.
Maybe you could get some cops on the show and ask them what they think about.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to understand this. Cops are human beings, and if you give somebody a lot of power and a lot of responsibility, they're going to crack and do crazy things sometimes, you know. And they're human beings too. Now, they should not think they're above the rest of us. Like this article said, they shouldn't be referring to the rest of us as civilians because they're civilians too. You know,
especially these part timers.
Yeah, but you know, I hate what police stand for. I hate the fact that you see a police car and you feel fear, you know, and you see a policeman and
fear when you see a police car.
Well, when you see a car, you know, if you're driving in a car and you see a police car in back of you, you know, I don't know if you drive, but that the common reaction is panic when you see one behind.
Well,
you.
I feel more comfortable because at least there's someone who's supposed to be protective.
Uh-huh.
Late night. Well, I don't know about driving, but when I see a car drive by in by my house or something, I feel a lot better than, you know, than some Corvette or something driving down 50 miles an hour right by my house.
Yeah.
You know, tearing rubber all the way.
Oh yeah, I mean that's what they're there for, to protect you, or you know.
I hope so.
I think anyway.
All right.
Any other thoughts?
No, except it's a great show, and it's good to have you back.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear from at least one person. Did anybody else say it was great to have me back?
It's good to have you back, Eric.
Oh, but our guest is saying it's good to have me back. But okay, well, thanks for calling.
Sure, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, our telephone number is 632-6901. And yes, it's good to have a guest, isn't it?
As long as I could hear what's going on.
Thank God somebody was in the studio when he said that. Felt like such a fool. But, yes, you know, guests are always nice to have, you know? Yes. Okay, should we take another call? Yes, I guess we should. This person's been waiting for a long time. Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
Hi.
Hi, it's Adam.
Hi, Adam. You've been waiting a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, just sitting here listening to the ring.
Ah, is it a nice ring, eh?
Well, it's the standard,
Well, let me tell you something, okay? Over in Europe, the phones don't ring the same way. They ring differently, you know, and
I've made a few calls to Europe.
Yeah, well, in London they go brr, brr, like that all the time.
And in Japan they sound like someone drowning.
I don't know about Japan. I wouldn't go to Japan, but I did go to, you know, almost every other country in Europe. It just goes bah, like that.
I forget, there's some Nordic country that goes just like one tone that goes ah. Then it waits a few seconds,
yeah.
And it goes again.
Yeah, all the Scandinavian countries have them at very irregularly paced. It's kind of weird. You know, we could call up some people at random over there, wake some folks up, but get some interesting parallels between the different rings.
Yeah, some interesting expletives in foreign languages.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Japan, it sounds like someone drowning. Did you ever call Japan?
No, I never did.
Oh, well, you should try. I think that... Wait, the country code is 011, I think 813 is Tokyo, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah? Okay, we'll have to try that.
Kind of like, you know?
I can try this. Hold on. Let's see. I have an 800 number here, okay?
Huh.
I'm going to put you on temporary hold while I try this. And we'll call the 800 number, which will ring in Japan. Aren't I well prepared? And we will see if it sounds like a drowning person. All right, I'm sorry. Is that what you meant, a drowning person? Yeah, we'll see. This may take a few seconds, but we'll get there. Oh, he's right, isn't he?
KDD, Japan Direct.
I'm sorry, is this Japan?
Yes.
I'm sorry, can you tell me what time it is over there, please?
It's 12:30.
12:30 p.m.
Yes.
And it's Sunday, right?
Sunday, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Sorry to disturb you.
Welcome.
Bye-bye. There, are you happy?
Yeah, would I lie to you?
that really does sound like a drowning person.
Little fib, you know?
Oh, boy. Wow. Does all of Japan sound like that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure about every exchange. You know, they might still have some old, you know, ancient switches in there, but, you know. Well, if Tokyo sounds like that.
It's pretty impressive, don't you think, though, that you mentioned Japan, I could just whip out an 800 number and call it like that?
Well, so could I, but...
Yeah, well, I did it first. So, yes, what's been happening? What's new?
Let's see, well, I'm sure that you know a few things that have existed before don't now.
No, actually, I'm very out of touch. You're talking about computer hacker type things, I assume.
You know, Red Knight's board?
Yeah, Red Knight's BBS board, bulletin board, yes. It's plunged down into the depths of despair.
He got bored of running it.
yeah, that's what happens a lot with bulletin boards. But
there is a new distribution site for Fun Magazine.
Okay, and there will be other bulletin boards too. But if there's computer people that want these phone numbers, they can call us and we'll give them to them. That's no problem.
Yeah, and how is didn't you go there for some conference?
Yeah,
I think Amsterdam.
Yeah, I went to the Galactic Hacker Party, and
it was.
It was the most incredible thing I think I've ever done in my life. I met so many bizarre, strange people, including Captain Crunch.
Ah, really?
Yeah, the original Captain Crunch that figured out that the 2600 hertz whistle that he found in a Captain Crunch box could control the phone system. And he's a very interesting and strange and bizarre person. So I'll say that. The only other thing I'll say is that he was at that party that I referred to before. But I wandered about the place. I met people from Chaos Computer Club, which is a most interesting organization.
Yeah.
And,
did you go to their offices?
Yes, I did. I certainly did.
Oh, wow. Lucky guy.
It was a lot of fun, and I learned quite a bit about it, and I you know, they learned a lot from me, too.
Uh-huh.
And we're all a lot closer now, which is really cool. You know, we have computer network addresses that we send mail to each other on, and we just, you know.
They're free also, aren't they?
Sorry?
Aren't a lot of the networks,
Yeah, the networks are free.
Yeah, which is very nice.
Yeah. And it was...
And it's, not only is it free, but it's also legal to be free.
Yeah, sort of.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. My only regret is I missed the Anarchist Convention. I wanted to go to that, too. But that was at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
Anarchist Convention and Riot afterwards that... Not really. I mean, but what was weird about this, I was getting mail for this I was just reminded about it today, this Anarchist Convention. I was getting mail for this thing for the last 6 months, you know? It was the most well-organized Anarchist Convention I think I've ever heard of.
An organized... That's sort of a contradiction.
Well, yeah, it is. But listen, there's a lot people don't know about anarchy. People say, oh, anarchy, it's like the worst thing in the world. It's people running around killing each other. That's not what anarchy is at all.
Everyone should have a little anarchy in their life.
I wish I could get, what do you call it? A anarchist representative from the conference. Maybe I'll try to call somebody next week or something. That will be my guest, yeah.
Yeah, you could have. That would be good, too. How's how are the networks over there compared to here? Is it digital?
They're introducing what they call ISDN, which is the Integrated Digital Network in Germany. That'll be in about a year or two. You know, the phone system...
Don't they have, like, step-by-step there mostly now?
Step-by-step is the most old-fashioned kind of phone system there is, and yes, there are...
Big jump for them.
There are systems like that around, but I'll tell you... We're being a little bit too technical here. The thing is, most people would notice things like payphones, and believe me, no getting around it. The phones suck. I mean, they are the worst. The payphones are terrible.
You must be talking about the ones we have.
No. The ones we have are a dream compared to those ones.
I had someone call me on a payphone today. They talked to me for 30 seconds, and then this beep came on and said that you know, insert another 50 cents for another minute.
Yeah,
so they
insert
50 cents, and I timed it. And 20 seconds later, they asked for more money.
Yeah, but you see, they don't do that in Europe. What they have instead is a system where you put money in, and it charges you, and you see your money run out on this little LED screen, okay?
That's what we need.
Yeah, well, it's horrible, though, because at the end, you lose. Everything disconnects at the end, and you're out. Forget it. Goodbye. Finished. You know, and that's the way it works everywhere. If you don't have enough money, you can't make the call.
Listen.
Germany is very bureaucratic, okay? Every call costs 30 pfennigs, which are... It's sort of like a dime, I guess. You know, and you put in three equivalents of dimes, I suppose. You know, 10 pfennigs is a mark, so 30... No, I'm sorry, wait. 100 pfennigs is a mark. So you put in 30 pfennigs in a payphone, and you can make a call. Now... All toll-free calls also cost 30 pfennigs, so they don't have the capability to have toll-free numbers yet.
Well, neither do certain payphones owned by a certain company.
That's true, too, but this is all throughout the country. Now, What's horrible about this is you very rarely get 10 pfennig pieces. You usually get 50 pfennig pieces. The phones don't take 50 pfennig pieces. You get lots of one mark pieces, right? And the phones gleefully take the one mark pieces. But if you only have to make one call, you know, you can't continue and make a new call on the same. I mean, you can, but you have to make more than one call.
They have.
It's very confusing.
Cards on phones there.
Sorry?
They have credit cards that you can use on phones there.
Yes, and that's my other bone that I wish to pick about this. They have lots of. Every country has their own credit card system where you stick a card in a phone. They have card phones and they have pay phones. Every country has more card phones and pay phones now, and nobody likes to use the cards. They all like to use the money system because it's more convenient. So you have long lines outside the pay phones, and, you know, all these credit card phones go a-begging. But the country that is worst is France. They think they're the best because they think they have this nice modern system where everybody uses credit cards. But if you don't have a credit card, you are screwed. I got off the train in Paris, and I wanted to call the place I was staying at. All right. Well, they have these little devices, okay? And I happen to have one with me because I bought it in Amsterdam. They have these, what we would call a white box, which is just a touchtone pad,
okay?
And they create these little touchtones. Let me see if the microphone can pick them up. You'll have to be quiet for a second while I see if this is true.
Right.
Yeah, you can hear them. You see, this is a 1, that's a 2, that's a 3, but there's another row, folks. There's yet another row, and this is what it sounds like. See? See, you hear that? You hear that? Listen. 1, 2, 3, and there's another one on the other side. Now, every touchtone phone has the capability for a 4x4 grid. But if you look at your phone, you'll see that it's a 3x4 grid. They leave off the last row, but there is the capability for another row there, and it's built into every phone because every tone that you hear is actually two tones together. And just with a little rewiring, you can create this.
That makes a silver box.
That makes it a silver box. Yeah, that turns a white box into a silver box. Now, these four extra tones, which are called A, B, C, D, and I'll play them for you. Here we go.
Yes.
You'll have to shut up for a second. Those are those four extra tones, A, B, C, D. We don't know what they do. Well, they supposedly work inside the military phone system, or United States military phone system known as Autobahn. And they also do something in Europe, too, which I haven't quite figured out yet. But they sell these little boxes in Amsterdam that have all 16 buttons. So I picked one up, and it's nice to have around, you know?
If you want, I could dig out of, I have right in front of me somewhere, an old TAP magazine that says what each of the military priority keys exactly do.
I don't think that is valid anymore.
For Autobahn?
I don't think so. I think that's outdated. I'm pretty sure it is. But anyway, in answer to your previous question, people use these little boxes sometimes to make free phone calls.
They managed to do that.
You somehow beat the payphone to the dial tone or something like that. I wasn't successful in figuring out how to do it.
Like the red box here that makes the noise that a coin does when you drop it in?
Yeah, that little tone.
It works the same way as it does.
No, they don't have those kind of tones. They have very high pitch signaling, and I don't think it's possible to intercept it.
But it seems like it's the same type of thing, though, that it does.
It seems like it, but it is different. You see, what they have is a very primitive system, but it's also harder to get into and fool around with.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating, but there are things to learn, you know, and that's what we're doing now. We have an information exchange.
Yeah, I have right here. I found it, and I don't think they've changed it, because why would they change Autobahn? You know, I mean, it's like the things here are so simple, and I don't see why they would change them, because they're... You know, there really couldn't be any improvements on it, you know, except maybe in the actual, you know, circuits, how fast it works.
Yeah, but I mean, these days you have all these long-distance phone companies, you don't really need...
Autobahn, I mean, you know, what does AT&T have to do with the Department of Defense Autobahn network?
They can just do it faster and cheaper, and there's no reason to have to shut down the entire nation's phone system in a military emergency, since there's so many ways of making phone calls now anyway, you see? There's fiber optics, there's satellites, there's microwaves, you know, there's landlines.
There was a very interesting show on TV today called Beyond Tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
You've probably seen it before, have you?
Never. Nope, I don't watch television that much.
Oh, well, it's I saw it was on in the newspaper, so I watched it. And they had this thing about, you know, the sunspots run in an 11-year cycle.
Uh-huh.
And we're reaching the peak of it now.
That's true.
Which means that all of your, you know, satellite communications traffic and telephone traffic is going to get basically screwed up now because the sun is sort of having a little temper tantrum.
Yeah, but it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, and it turns out something like a month and a half ago or 2 months ago, there was a large part of Canada had lost all power because of a flare on the sun.
Yeah, and you'll find satellite transmissions are interrupted and telephone conversations sometimes get cut off, things like that, you know?
Very. And 11 years from now, when it reaches the next peak, is exactly when they're going to be putting up the space station.
Well, I doubt that. I mean,
once they realize that, they're going to say, well, I think we can postpone it for a year or two after that.
Speaking of space, and also speaking of cutting off telephone calls, I got to cut you off because I do have other people waiting, okay? So thanks for calling, and I'll
repeat the other person before you, you know. It's good to have you back on the air. And
okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. It makes me realize I made the right decision by getting on that airplane and coming home.
You actually had serious thoughts about staying there?
Well, I could stay there forever, you know. It's such a fun place. It really is, especially when you live there and you don't act like a tourist. You don't take, you know, buses with the microphone in the front that they tell you, oh, this is, you know, this is where that particular historical thing happened. You have to walk around and figure it out yourself. That's the only way.
Yeah, sounds like.
I'm serious. That's the only way. Otherwise, you won't have any fun.
I believe you. It's like, you know, it's like somebody comes from Kansas and goes to New York City, and all they see is, like, the Statue of Liberty and, you know, walk to the top of the Empire State Building or something.
Yeah. I walked to the top of the Eiffel Tower. Well, I didn't walk to the top of the Eiffel Tower, but I walked up a good part of it and took an elevator. And that was fun, but I didn't have any damn tour guide telling me how to do it.
You know, it's like 1 foot, then the next, then
I mean, I know how to climb a damn TV tower. Anyway, thanks very much for calling. I'll talk to you again sometime.
All right.
Now, speaking of space... today's newspaper. Speaking of today's newspaper, did you see the picture? Former President Reagan goes punk? Oh, it was great. He's got a skinhead now. A mohawk or something like that. Oh, this is amazing. This picture is going up on my wall. If you don't have it, go out and get Newsday page 3. I'm sure every newspaper has a picture of this. This is something you can't... he's bald on one side and not on the other. It's just the way I've always wanted to see him, I guess. Anyway, President George Bush's science advisor, D. Allen Bromley, yesterday approved the October launch of a nuclear-powered probe to Jupiter, despite claims by protesters that a Challenger-like accident could poison Earth's atmosphere with the most toxic substance in the universe. Now, if anybody knows more about this, please let me know, because, you know, why are they sending plutonium up there or something? What would an explosion do with that kind of device on board? The Galileo space probe, which gets its electricity from two nuclear generators, would be launched from the space shuttle Atlantis as part of a mission scheduled to begin October 12th. It would be the first time nuclear power has been carried on the shuttle. Opponents are preparing a lawsuit in federal court to stop the mission. Now, you know, I'm kind of torn here because I'm very much in favor of space exploration, but I'm also very wary of nuclear things. And, you know, if there is a danger here... Let's be very careful with it. If the Challenger had been carrying that kind of material, what would have happened? That's a very important point. Also very important, we're going to get back to the phone calls in just a moment, I promise. I was in England for a very important event, namely the 50th anniversary of the outbreak of World War II. And I was extremely impressed with the knowledge that so many people had. I mean... this is a war that happened in their backyard. Everybody knows about it. I mean, there are things that I didn't really know about. I didn't know that all the kids in London were taken away and brought out to the suburbs. And a fair number were brought over here to the United States. And they lived here with American families for something like 5 or 6 years while the war raged over there. We took care of their kids. And one boatload of kids was actually sunk by a German torpedo or something like that. It was actually a boat full of kids on its way over here was sunk in wartime. It was awful. I saw these documentaries on television. Every night they would have something else. They would have this program that recreated news events of 50 years ago as if it was a newscast, and articles in all the newspapers. And everybody knew about it. You know, everybody was interested in it because it had relevance. And it's a shame that we don't have that same interest here, because it's just every bit as relevant. And, you know, we do well to learn some of these lessons. But there's one thing that I think you would find very interesting, especially some of you people that are into current music. The title of this very short piece, Why We'll Always Keep Meeting Sweet Vera Again and Again. At every nostalgic look back at World War II, there she is, fresh as a daisy, voice in fine fettle, making it hard for us to believe that it was all really 50 years ago. Dame Vera Lynn's new book is called We'll Meet Again. And of course we do, whenever an affectionate symbol of those days is required. Squeaky clean, the Cockney English rose, timeless, homely, and so, so nostalgic. The rest of Europe has been baffled over the years at the British preoccupation with the war. What is it we keep harking back to? Why are we so resolutely trapped in those images, so powerful, even to those of us born after the war? Other Europeans are heard to say that this backward looking to our finest hour has done us damage. It pulls us in the wrong direction, prevents us leaping ahead in Europe. It's understandable enough. Our memories of war are very different from those of other European nations. We won. We were never invaded. We never suffered the humiliation of the tramp of enemy boots on our soil. To be sure, some 40,000 of our civilians died in the Blitz of 1940-41, but even so, the war was never truly carried across our own threshold. It happened out there with our gallant boys, and we were free to mythologize it in a way the French, let alone the Germans, never could. In Vera Lynn's image, and in this new book of hers, rests much of our worst sentimentalization. I'm going to try to say this word. Sentimentalization. I think I said it. It's not Dame Vera's fault. I guess we'd say Dame Vera's fault, but I think it sounds better to say Dame. It's not Dame Vera's fault, goodness knows. The force's sweetheart is caught in this time warp, whether she likes it or not. After 1945, she never managed to make much of a career for herself beyond her association with wartime hits. Her latest book, out shortly, is billed as a social history of the British people during the war. Born in East Ham, which is in England, daughter of a plumber, real name Welch, she couldn't have had better beginnings to qualify her for stardom in blitz-torn Britain, where the East End of London was one of the hardest-hit zones. Her first professional engagement came at the age of 6 in a local concert. At 17, she joined Joe Loss's band as a vocalist, and then for most of the war years, she sang with Ambrose's band. In the first years of the war, she was picked by the BBC to test a program called Sincerely Yours, a format of songs and personal messages beamed especially at servicemen. Her own songs caught the upbeat tempo of official propaganda, combined with a little hint of the worry and anxiety that were closer to the real feelings of most people. We'll meet again. I'll be seeing you, and the more propagandist The White Cliffs of Dover, which was somewhat mocked in its day, according to my parents. She toured abroad, and at the end of the war, Germany itself, heartening the frontline troops. She was rediscovered in 1975 when she was given a television show of her own, but there were some relatively quiet years in between. She was, of course, the obvious choice for recruitment into the Falklands propaganda war. Those who were uncomfortable with that adventure felt the wrong note was struck by using her, but war is without subtlety. Every available witness has always described her as the most likable, modest, and charming woman. That's part of her secret. She's no Zsa Zsa, just the girl next door. She has been married forever to clarinetist Harry Lewis, and they are an eminently sensible couple. They have one daughter and live in Sussex. If she'd been leading a drink and drugs life with half a dozen husbands and a series of catastrophic comebacks, she wouldn't now be the cheerful monument she is to the energetic British nostalgia industry. That's why we'll always keep meeting sweet Vera again and again. 632-6901.
Does anybody here remember Vera Lynn? Remember how she said that we would meet again some sunny day?
And as you can see, even today's current rock stars have a sense of history. In England, anyway. That's kind of the point I was hoping to make. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hey.
Hey.
Wow, you seem to really like Pink Floyd.
Well, I do, you know, especially the early stuff.
Yeah, speaking of early stuff, I just picked up a Syd Barrett.
Did you? You know, I saw a Syd Barrett record in London Tower Records, believe it or not.
Yeah,
It was a tribute. You know, they tribute him like he's dead. He's not dead, he's just insane.
Well, I picked up Peel Session
on
CD, and it's got some pretty interesting stuff. But on that note about the nuclear accident, or the nuclear...
potential nuclear accident. It hasn't happened yet.
Have you heard Jello Biafra?
Yes, and why he was glad the space shuttle blew up.
Matter of fact, I have that queued up.
Well, you don't have to play it because we're almost out of time, but...
But, I mean, he's got some interesting things. He said something like if, like, a gram of plutonium could infect, like, 5 billion people with a cancer.
Sure could.
And it's pretty scary, but I was just wondering, let's just have a list I've made throughout the show. Were you in Greenland at all?
Why the hell would I be in Greenland?
Iceland, I mean, Iceland.
Oh, Iceland, no, I wasn't, although, you know, I am one of the kind of people that would want to go to both Iceland and Greenland.
I'd love to go to Iceland.
Yeah, yeah, except they don't. The train service there is rather sporadic, but I would like to go there. I'd like to go almost anywhere.
Most recently, they had, in Iceland, they were having protests against the United States military force.
Uh-huh.
Station there.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I found that interesting. And did you find out anything, or did you see anything about the Green Party?
Oh, yeah, they're all over the place. They're setting up a coalition government, I believe, in Holland, and also in Berlin. I think there's a Green Mayor now, which, you know, if you don't know what that means, it sounds very funny, and I won't bother to explain it, but there is a Green Mayor in Berlin, and some people were kind of, you know, hesitant as to just what that would mean. But so far it hasn't been bad at all.
Did you speak to anyone while over there?
Sure, I spoke to people. What do you think, I kept to myself?
You gotta
live with the people. You gotta hang out with them and, you know, share experiences and do things. You know, one thing I learned from being over there is that we live life here so frantically and so quickly, you know. Over in Berlin, I would hang out at a street cafe for literally 6 hours. You just sort of hang out there, you watch the passing scene, you talk to people, you meet new people, you know. Here, you know, you try to hang out, and, you know, I've been saying this to people ever since I got back. Hey, let's go somewhere and just hang out. So, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to, you know, get to work tomorrow. I ask people, what have you done? What have you been up to? What's been going on? Oh, nothing, same old crap, you know. It's like, come on, let's break out of this shell. Let's start experiencing life together, you know. That's really what we have to do.
Also, going back to the police thing.
Yeah.
I have to say that it seems, from what I know and from what my friends are like, it's really, really trendy to hate the police and think, oh God, they're fascist pigs.
Well, that's just another form of racism, you know?
Yeah.
You can't generalize about any group of human beings. What I'm saying is, I don't like what police stand for. They're citizens walking around with guns, you know, that make people afraid. Whether or not it's their fault that they make people afraid is irrelevant. The fact is that they do.
See, the thing is, I personally, I think, have respect for police. I mean, not all police, and there are corrupt police, you know, just like there are corrupt politicians and there are corrupt, you know, businessmen.
Sure, police have the same problems as everybody else. They're husbands and sometimes wives, and, you know, they can act irrationally.
The thing is that I've never really had any personal problems with the police, and you know, when I've gotten into accidents, they've been the first people on the scene.
How many accidents have you gotten into?
Well, no, I was in an accident once with a bicycle and a stupid motorist.
Uh-huh.
Cars are like the biggest threat on highways today. You know that? Anyway.
that's certainly true. Well, okay, you know, you've had good experiences, but, I mean, there are plenty of people that have had bad experiences, too. And
But there really are. I mean, as far as the guns go, if you've got some guy with a gun, with a few people at gunpoint, or having a shootout,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he could care less.
Uh-huh.
Whether it was, you know, morally right, and, you know, it would be nice if we lived in a perfect society and we had...
No, it wouldn't. It would be terrible. I would hate it.
Oh.
Well, let me just say one thing, okay? You mentioned guns, and it just somehow brought something to me. I heard what President Bush said yesterday, okay, about how he's not going to outlaw any kind of automatic weapons after this guy in what is it, Kentucky or whatever, shoots all his co-workers again, you know? It's like this happens every couple of months in this country, it seems. I mean, you know, I just want to say... Mr. President, you are a fool. I mean, you are a fool. How can you say this? How can you say not having automatic weapons wouldn't necessarily have changed anything here? Why should somebody who's got a history of all kinds of mental problems be allowed to get some kind of an assault rifle? You know, it's so stupid.
Did you read the...
It is so incredibly dumb. I don't understand it. I feel really, really annoyed by this, you know? I mean... Okay, I got a question for you. How come we can't have drugs, but we can have guns? Explain that to me.
I have no idea, to tell you the truth.
What is the damn difference? You know, why can't we have drugs if we can have guns?
I know,
I mean... kids kill themselves with guns all the time, right?
And at least...
And kids can kill themselves with drugs, too. What is the difference? The only difference is some people think drugs are fun, and more young people like drugs than guns.
Yeah.
You know? So, look,
President Bush,
if you're going to outlaw one, outlaw the other. If you're not going to outlaw one, then... legalize the other. That's what I have to say.
The reason is because that the drug lobby doesn't have as good and as... No, not as good. That's the wrong word. As strong and as politically effective lobby group.
Okay, well, now that we're importing some of them from Colombia, maybe we can... maybe they'll start lobbying over here. Who knows?
Anyway, what was that number that you had, that 800 number from...
Let's see. 800 for Japan? I guess I can give that out, can't I? Yes, it's public service. It's supposed to be when you want to make a call to Japan and you have a Japanese credit card, which, of course, I know many of our listeners have. It's 800-543-0051.
0051?
And that's the number, yes. I got to move to some more calls. Thanks very much for calling. 632-6901. Good evening.
Hello, am I actually on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, my God. Well, it's my first time listening to you. I think your show's great.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, oh God, you're just talking about so many things, it's like...
I know, it just sort of comes out of my mouth and I can't stop it, you know?
Alright, well, I was like listening to you since your smoking story on the train. Yeah, alright, that guy with the cookies, did you like do it, what was that, in Amsterdam?
I was in Amsterdam, yeah.
Yeah, alright, so like, the police, like, they don't care about drugs?
No, you see, they, you know, it's pretty much... so common that it would be silly to prosecute everybody for every little thing. And, you know, the police go after the real crime. You know, people taking drugs obviously are doing it on their own free will, and they're going to do it one way or the other, so to try to track them down each time is pointless and a big waste of time.
So then, like, you agree with that article you read before about legalizing drugs?
I think it probably makes more sense than declaring war on them, yes. I mean, imagine if we declared war on Pepsi or something, right? People would still get it somehow.
You know, you don't think that is possible, like, encouragement to people? I mean...
Well, it might be. You know, it might be at first, as people think they're getting away with something. But when you realize you're not really getting away with anything, and if you want to screw up your life, you're free to do it anytime you want, then the thrill goes away. Half the fun of taking drugs is the thrill of doing something wrong, you know?
I don't know that I necessarily agree with that.
I necessarily agree with it either, but I just think that our attitude is wrong and it's not going to work. I don't know what the answer is. Honestly, I don't.
Yeah, well, our attitude is definitely different. Well, because I was in Spain. I mean, that was the one country you said you weren't in, and that's like the only country in Europe that I was in, so...
Uh-huh.
Right? Anyway, so when you were in West Berlin, now they're letting everyone... Well, they're not letting everybody out, but through Hungary.
Uh-huh.
People are getting
out. And that's a fascinating story, too, you know. It's all these East Germans... you know, finding a way out of their country. It's a fun story there, and it's finally getting some press over here too.
So then, do you think that things are going to like change over there?
I think
they are.
Well, things obviously have changed already enough for this to happen, and yes, something is going to have to happen. Hopefully, it will be a positive step. And you know, the thing is, East Germany is in a bad predicament because if they start liberalizing like, you know, Poland does, and like, you know, other Eastern Bloc countries. There's no point to their existence because East Germany and West Germany, both existing as democratic republics, wouldn't... why don't they just merge then? You know, they're both Germans, you see. So the whole point of East Germany lies in it being a communist country. So if that goes away, the whole point for its existence goes away.
Well...
And, you know, that's not true of Poland. That's not true of Hungary. That's not true of any of the other countries because it's a different nationality.
Yeah, well, I think that all those countries... are basically satellite countries, or at least they were, basically stemming from the Cold War, the Yalta Agreement conventions. And as the power base of the Soviet Empire declines, you have all this internal squabbling in Azerbaijan and Georgia and all that, you're going to definitely have some nationalist struggles for independence. And that was like basically what you get into causes of World War One.
Uh-huh. That's true. I think people here should be following this because we are, believe it or not, living through one of the most fascinating periods of history, especially in Eastern Europe, but also in other parts, and also even in this country. There's a lot happening. You know, the whole abortion thing is heating up again. The civil rights issue, and I don't know much about what happened in Bensonhurst. I just heard things about it in while I was over in Europe. But that's all, it's all happening, and you have to keep up to date on it because people are going to tell you things that aren't true, and you have to interpret it for yourself.
Right. Okay. So, what is your interpretation of abortion since you brought it up?
Oh boy. Well, I'm pro-choice.
Right.
I don't have any problem saying that. But I'm also pro-debate. You know, I don't mind, people discussing the matter. But I think it's cruel if you take away the choice of somebody. I think it's definitely leading to problems. I just saw two things in the newspaper this week alone of people on Long Island killing their children, their infant children. Oh, that's got to be bad alternative.
I have no idea. I mean, I saw in the paper today Ronald Reagan's picture, which is great, but I don't know what you're talking about with this abortion.
Somebody drowned their kid somewhere, and another kid was found in a toilet or something disgusting like that. I don't know. There just seems to be a rash of mothers killing their infant kids. And it just seems to me that if they had the clear option, obviously they didn't want a kid or they wouldn't have done that. If they had the clear option to terminate this while it was still humane, then this wouldn't have happened.
Well, I absolutely agree.
Yeah. And, I don't know what it's like to carry a kid. I probably never will. But I guess it's enough to drive some people insane if it's not what they want to do at that particular time of their life.
I think almost everything you said makes a lot of sense today.
That scares me.
But
let me just say one more thing about the abortion issue, though. I don't think in any circumstance a man should be making up the decision in any way, because there is no way he can understand what it's really like. I mean, I think women should be making this decision alone, and I think you find most women are in support of pro-choice. That's my opinion.
Yeah, well, Sandra Day O'Connor is the only woman on Supreme Court.
Yeah, well, how do you think she got there? By being a Jean Kirkpatrick of a woman.
Okay, if you say so. This is
Jean Kirkpatrick, Margaret Thatcher, and Sandra Day O'Connor, okay? They should start a punk rock group, I think.
Well, did you see the firing line debate a couple nights ago?
No.
Oh, because they had, who is it? That... Never mind.
Okay. Listen, I got to get some more calls anyway, but thanks for calling.
Talking to me.
Okay, take care. Good evening.
I was wondering about the gun thing. What's his name? I'm trying to think of the president. When George Bush went and said that, we're not going to have automatic weapons, he's going against our, the Constitution.
I just called him a fool on the air, didn't I? I wonder if I'm going to get in trouble for that. Well, I believe it, though. I really, with all my heart, I believed it when I said that, and I still do, because, look at what's going on. Look at what's happening. But I'm sorry, that's not your point. What did you have to say?
Well, I really think that, guns should be legal, because, it's really, they're taking it away to get it away from, the drug users and everything, right?
Uh-huh.
So, where are they most likely getting it from? They're probably the black market, right?
Yeah.
So if we take it away...
So you're using pretty much the same argument that I was using for legalizing drugs.
Yeah, they're just going to get it through their own ways.
Yeah, it's a dilemma. I don't know. I don't know. It seems like right now it's too easy, it's too common, and we're paying the price for it. I don't know, it's a big dilemma. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, guns should never have been invented in the first place, but that's kind of a silly attitude, I guess, at this stage in the game.
About the spaceship thing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. They said it really, if it ever goes off, it really, the way they said it, they had it contained. It's like on a, it's inside, since it's inside the shuttle, during the explosion, it probably, nothing will really get any, really, anywhere really far away from the spaceship itself when it blows up, so.
So there's little risk, you're saying?
Yeah, it, well, actually not little, because it can probably reach from where Cape Canaveral is to Tampa, you know, over near Tampa, so it's.
Well, I sure hope they're not doing anything that could threaten, you know, even a few lives on the ground, because that would be, you know, that's criminal to do something like that. But, you know, I am very much in favor of exploring other lands and other planets and things like that, so I'm very torn here. I just want to know the facts. So, oh dear, we just had a power glitch. Are we still on the air? Yes, we are. Thanks for calling, sir.
Okay.
All right, 632-6901. Actually, we should be going off soon, but the host of the next radio program should be in here in a moment. Good evening.
Hi, Eric. This is about the...
You were on already. You shouldn't be on again, but make it very quick.
Okay. Actually, there's practically no risk at all. Because, first of all, like the person said, it is contained. Even the way it has to be used, it has to be contained. Otherwise, it'll burn up this whatever satellite or probe it'll be in.
Uh-huh.
You know, think about it. The thing's going to be a few thousand degrees because it's a nuclear reaction. And if it wasn't contained, the rest of the probe would just melt. So if the space shuttle blew up, you know, it wouldn't be nearly as much heat as the actual reaction itself was causing. It, you know, it would do no damage. The worst thing that it could do is like fall to the ground and land on someone's head. You know.
Well, if that's true, then I feel good about that. But you know, what are these people talking about that say that there's a big danger?
Because they think that if the space shuttle blows up, then this thing will blow up also, and it'll spread radiation all over the place.
Uh huh. Well, what if the radioactive elements get out of
There isn't much in there. If it blows up close to the ground, the space shuttle blows up close to the ground, first of all, you know, it wouldn't leak anyway. And if it did, it would be so close to the ground it would all land in like one area, then they could just clean up that area and it would be fine. You know.
Also, you know, this nuclear reaction, when does this nuclear reaction take place? While the astronauts are still sitting next to it?
No, because then the radiation would sort of hit them and they'd all have kids with three heads. The reaction itself, they start the reaction while it's in space.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They use the reaction as, instead of using liquid fuel or something, they use the reaction to power whatever electronics are in it, and as thrust, so that it can go to wherever it's going to go.
I see.
It'll heat something in, or whatever it does. I'm not exactly sure how it...
Well, listen, let's take this up next week, okay? Because this is something that bears more... You know, I'll look into it a little bit more and see if I can maybe find somebody. Maybe I'll get another guest, somebody that opposes this whole thing. So keep your eyes on the newspapers.
Well, why don't you call NASA? Maybe they have somebody in the Long Island area at the time who'll be able to go to speak about it.
That's a possibility. Probably somebody right here in the Stony Brook campus.
If you want, you probably have it. Otherwise, I could probably get you the number to some administrative office at NASA.
Okay, you do that.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right, bye.
Good evening.
Yes, when you were in Europe, did you notice that a lot of things were on a truss system?
Yes, very good thing you mentioned that, because I did want to point to that. In Amsterdam, for instance...
The tram system.
The tram system, you're supposed to buy the ticket from the driver and then go to the back and cancel it in these little yellow machines. And a lot of people just get on the trams and they don't cancel their tickets or anything like that. And you know, nobody really goes after them or cares either way. And that's true in Berlin also, and I think in Hamburg to a degree, but nowhere is there more of a truss system than in East Berlin, where you actually, you go up to this, I hesitate to call it a machine, because all it is a place where you put coins on one side, and you could put anything you want in there, and then next to that is a completely unrelated device that has a roll of tickets, so not only can you bypass it altogether and just walk onto a train, but you can just walk up to it and take a ticket without putting anything in the canister, or you can take the whole damn roll of tickets and have a lifetime supply, you know? So, but by the time I figured it out, I was paying virtually a penny per ride, so it's kind of silly to feel like you're getting away with anything.
The newspapers were like that, too. They just have them in bags and a can of coins next to it.
Uh-huh.
And just put the coin in and take the paper, or take the can and the paper, or whatever.
Yeah. That's,
really legalized, too, like drugs.
Yeah, the thing is, like the drugs, like the nudity, the Europeans are saying, well, this doesn't really require that much, overlook. We shouldn't be focusing so much time on making sure people pay their fares because, you know, it doesn't really make that much difference as far as paying for the whole system. I guess they get money through taxes or something like that. So, people pay for the system, enough people pay to keep it running, and they don't have to hire people to watch over them to make sure that they're paying, which I think in New York they end up losing money somehow by doing that.
Yeah.
Okay?
All right.
Thanks for calling.
All right.
And that's just about do it for us tonight. Brain Damage is, of course, your locally sponsored public service program that brings you all kinds of strange topics for no particular reason at all every Saturday night from 10 to 12. Let's all concentrate real hard and get Hurricane Hugo to make a guest appearance up here because that would be a lot of fun for one and all. Also, anybody seen that that wildcat or whatever it is wandering around? They say that the wildcat that is now in a stretch of woods in Yaphank no longer needs a water hole in the landfill because of all this this rain that's been coming down. Citizens apparently are continuing to participate in the search. Town animal shelter workers heard gunshots coming from the woods at 6:45 a.m. yesterday. No hunters were found, according to a supervisor, who also said hopefully no one will get hurt by shooting each other. Shelter workers also were kept busy investigating a report of cougar tracks in Calverton, which turned out to be dog prints. They answered about 30 calls from the curious, down from around 60 on Thursday. State officials stressed that they couldn't be sure from the plaster mold taken from the original paw prints that the animal was indeed a cougar. It doesn't seem a wise use of the taxpayers' money right now to be looking for a cat that may not exist. And that quote of the week came from Stephen Lawrence, senior wildlife biologist with the State Department of Environmental Conservation. By next week at this time, we should know whether or not there really was a cat. And we'll know more about Hurricane Hugo and hopefully more about the space shuttle. Thanks to everybody who called up. Tune in. Keep listening. We have plenty of good music coming up for you, and I'll be back again next week. Or will I be at the BAD show? I don't know. It's a real dilemma. I'll try to figure it out. See you later. You lock the door, throw away the key. Someone in my head, but it's not me.
All right, you were at USB a minute ago. You still are. It's 12:13. We're in Stony Brook for the legal purposes. Yep. This is my very first show. Sunday morning. It is Sunday now. And you got me after Eric's great show where he discovered whatever did happen to Vera. We'll get deeper into that later. Oh yeah, I'm Steve, and I'll be here till 2:30. And after the Battlestar Galactica, just there it goes.
Diane with the concert billboard for Sunday, September 17th. Tonight, Fawn Young Cannibals and Nina Cherry will be at the Jones Beach Theater. For tomorrow night, Monday the 18th, Bill Cosby will be at the Apollo Theater. Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers will be at the Beacon Theater, and Katrina and the Waves will be at the Cat Club. For Tuesday, the 19th, R.E.M. and the Throwing Muses will be at the Meadowlands, and the Gun Club will be at the Cat Club. For Wednesday, September 20th, R.E.M. and the Throwing Muses will be at Nassau Coliseum, Boy Dog Pondering will be at the Knitting Factory, and Yellow Man will be at SOB's. He returns there the following night. For Friday, the 22nd, Joe Jackson will be at the Jones Beach Theater, Robin Hitchcock will be at Maxwell's, excuse me, that's a solo acoustic, Bad Brains, Leeway, and Planet Dread will be at the New Ritz, and the Flesh Tones and the Dead Mills Band will be here at Stony Brook as a free concert as part of Fall Fest. For Saturday, the 23rd, Bella will be at the New Ritz, Big Audio Dynamite will be at Bay Street, Different in Tilbrook will be at the Rap Arts Center, and Underdog, Super Touch, and In Your Face will be at Sundance. For Sunday, the 24th, Died Pretty will be at Maxwell's. Concert Billboard is brought to you weekdays, 3 and 9 a.m. and 4:30 and 10 p.m. Weekends, noon and midnight. If you missed anything, give us a call, 516-632-6901. This is Diane on WUSB, Stony Brook.
That was Diane with Concert Billboard, 15 minutes.